Hello. Of course, you know I'm happy to be here. I talked about that last night, how much I love teaching the seven steps. Today we're going to start with number 247. We left off, we did 246 last night, so today we'll start with 247. Let me give you that link. There it is. By the way, I forgot to say last night, but for anyone who may be listening on the radio, if you want to follow along, you can go to the following website address, RDA7. It is the digit 7, it is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.com. .wordpress.com. Again, that is RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. When you get to the website, you will go to step 2, which is on the menu bar. When you click on step 2, choose the numbering sequence that's going to let you find your way to 247. And go ahead and find your way to 247 because that's where we're going to start. And before doing that, of course, my precious choice is to take a moment of silence. And so, if you all would do that with me, I would appreciate it. Amen. All right, so as usual, I will begin by reading number 247 in the book, and then we'll look at 247 in the journal. And of course, what I have given you is the link to the journal. The book, again, is called The Seven Steps to Awakening, and right now the quotes that are in the book that we're reading are the teachings of Ramana Maharshi as they are stated by Murugunar in the book The Garland of Guru's Sayings. How's that for a mouthful? So here's number 247. Until the snake illusion goes, its ground, the real rope, will not be recognized. Until the world of false phenomena disappears, the self, its ground, will not shine clear. Well, I don't know if everyone here is familiar with Ramana Maharshi. Those who are very well aware of the snake illusion reference here. You know, there's a teaching of Ramana's, and it may not even been originally Ramana's. That's just where I know it to originate from. And then Papaji taught it. He was a devotee of Ramana's, and now Muji teaches it. He was a devotee of Papaji's, so it's at least passed down that far. If it was somewhere before Ramana, I cannot say. But Ramana's teaching is basically that, if a man, sees a rope, but he really thinks he sees a snake, he's afraid of it, and he'll run or whatever, because he thinks he saw a snake, so he's afraid. But if someone takes him back and shows it to him and says, "No, look, it's just a rope," then his fear disappears. So, the idea of the snake is just in the mind. You know, it's just an illusion. It never was a snake. There never was a snake. There was always just a rope. But the fear was still experienced because of the belief that it was a snake. right? But it was an illusion. It was always just a rope, and it was always completely harmless. So what 247 says, until the snake illusion goes, it's referring to that analogy, until the snake illusion goes, its ground, the real rope, will not be recognized. So until somebody takes the man back and says, look, it's not a snake, it's just a rope, that man may still, for example, not want to walk behind that shed, right? He may not want to go back there and get the axe. If somebody was saying, hey, Tom, go behind the shed and get the axe, he's going to be like, no, there's a snake back there, I don't want to go. And so it's not a snake, it's a rope. Come on, let me show you. I say, it's just a rope, Tom. Until he sees for himself that it is just a rope, that snake illusion exists in his mind, and he does not want to go behind the shed. Yeah, oh, thank you, sweet one. My daughter just brought me a little strawberry smoothie. Thank you. So, until the snake illusion goes, its ground, the real rope, will not be recognized. Until the world of false phenomena disappears, the self, its ground, will not shine clear. And this is something I don't think that we should ignore. And I say that directly because I think I recognize, you never know what you're seeing out there, but I think I recognize people who want to ignore this. That's what I think I see. I could be wrong. But I do know that when I have made posts in the past, possibly even this post, no, not this particular one, but posts in the past from the journal, which talk about seeing only self, right? No longer seeing a world of objects, but seeing only self. Sometimes there are comments made on these posts that want to say, you know, but the world is self. And maybe from a point of knowledge, that point could be made. I'm not saying that it couldn't be. But what appears to happen sometimes is that actually what's really going on is that there is an attachment to this world. And instead of going through the path of honest awakening to seeing only self, and then seeing however we see from that point, because of the attachment to world, sometimes I think we want to shortcut it, shortcut awakening, and just start saying, ah, but the world is self, you know, and it's not real, it's not genuine. And if you know anything about me, if you've listened to my teachings for any length of time, you know that truly the only thing I'm interested in is authenticity or genuineness in my awakening process. Which means that I do not want to declare from some intellectual knowledge and some attachment to the world, declare all there is God here, when I still, to any degree, look out and see, Jay, and to any degree experience Jay as still somehow different from me. You know what my experience, my honest and genuine experience, is that differences are fading, separateness is disappearing. I talked on Friday, unfortunately it was not recorded, so unless you were here to hear it, you didn't hear it. But I talked on Friday about how I have the experience now of hearing one voice, and I said, I don't mean Holy Spirit by that. I don't mean Holy Spirit. I hear one voice, whether it's speaking through me or seemingly speaking through others, there is only one voice. And then that one voice is speaking one of two things. It is either speaking things that are meaningful, things that are pointing towards truth, and I identify that with as my voice, right? It's either speaking my voice, or it's speaking a meaninglessness that I once believed in, and that meaninglessness is easily disregarded. You know, it's just unimportant. That doesn't matter. So I mentioned that I hear one voice speaking two things. So this is, I would call it, a sign of the fading of the belief in differences, of the belief in separation. But if I was to tell you I never for a moment experience Jay as Jay, not me, Lynn as Lynn, not me, right? Danielle as Danielle, not me, I would be lying to you. And I don't have any interest in lying to you or to myself. That doesn't seem to be a part of the genuine or authentic awakening process. So what I am saying to you is that I am experiencing what I call an awakening. It's, for me, it seems to be happening in a gradual type of way, right? I notice how my seeing is changing and I rejoice in that. But at the exact same time, there's an awareness that this shift is not full or this shift is not complete. And I want to continue to ride this wave until it takes me all the way to the other shore. Which means, until, without even the most minute exception, until all I see is self, I don't want to fall into any false declaring of the world as God, if that makes any sense at all. I hope it does. So let's look back at Ramana Maharshi again. Until the snake illusion goes, its ground, the real rope, will not be recognized. Until the world of false phenomena disappears, and he doesn't say completely, but I feel completely is inherent there. Maybe I'm making that up. But I feel when he says that, until the world of false phenomena disappears, he means completely, right? Until the world of false phenomena disappears, the self, its ground, will not shine clear. So that is the quote. Why don't we go to the journal, number 247, and let's see what I wrote on February 15th. Do not fear. Oh, very nice. I like this. I already know where it's going. Do not fear because differences persist in the vision and thinking you experience. Persist they will until they disappear completely. Rely on the heart and its wisdom. Do not put undue emphasis on the differences expressed in mind or world. So as I mentioned to you before turning to the journal entry, I do have an experience of fading separateness and increasing oneness, for lack of better words. Like I said, that experience of hearing one voice a lot of the time, enough of the time that I say that is my experience. It's not an occasional glimpse. It is a fairly consistent experience, but not wholly consistent, as I've pointed out. There are moments when Lynn is Lynn, separate from me. Jay is Jay, separate from me. Danielle is Danielle, separate from me. Right? Those moments also still exist. So, differences persist. Right? That's what's happening. Even though there's this fading of differences, at the same time, differences persist to some degree. And if we are listening to the ego regarding this, we could fall back into guilt, unworthiness. I can never do this. It depends on how far back you want to fall. You could even fall back into the truth is not true, the world is true, and that's why I can't get away from seeing differences. It just depends on how far you want to follow that ego trail. Yes, my love.
Did you try it?
Oh, not yet. You want me to try it? Hold on. I'm going to try my smoothie right now. It's excellent.
Okay.
Thank you. So, again, if I want to listen to the ego's interpretation of the fact that my new perception is not yet whole, right? The ego is going to take me into self-judgment. That's what the ego does. But of course, if I do not listen to the ego, if I stay with the right mind, or what we often call Holy Spirit here, well then, instead, I'm going to get some type of guidance, like the guidance we see here in number 247. Do not fear, because differences persist in vision and thinking you experience. Do not worry about the fact that that's still there, to whatever degree. It doesn't matter whether it's still there somewhat, because the fading of the belief in separation has already, you know, moved on fairly well, or whether it still seems to be your primary experience. it doesn't matter. Either way, this first sentence still applies. Do not fear, because differences persist in the vision and thinking you experience. Don't worry about it. Persist they will until they disappear completely. That's just the way it is right now, right? That's the way you see from your current point of seeing. But what are you to do? Rely on the heart and its wisdom. Just because you still see differences, just because you still know ego in your thinking, does not mean that you have to give your attention to it, right? You can, even while the mind is obviously still split, pick which half of the split you want to give your attention to. So you can rely on the heart and its wisdom. Do not put undue emphasis on the differences expressed in mind or world, right? Do not put undue emphasis on it. Let it continue to fade. Put your attention, your focus on what we call Holy Spirit. So, enough said on that one, I think. Let's scroll down. And on the left, you will see a little blue 248. You can click on that 248, and that will take you to the next journal entry. And, of course, before reading 248 from the journal, I will read 248 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, at the bottom of page 52. Only when the world illusion goes does the blissful light of self arrive. Only when the world illusion goes does the blissful light of self arrive. Life lived in this bright, blissful light is our true natural life. Other ways of life are full of trouble and fear. All right, let's look at number 248 in the journal. Do not think yourself wrong because you do not experience perfect peace, joy, love of natural self. Your experience is the outcome of believing false ideas as true. Recognize the cause of your experience and surrender to the deep peace trust abiding in the heart now. Again, same type of quote. We have what we would call Holy Spirit telling us not to worry, not to self-judge, because we do not have a full awakening experience. We might not even feel like we have any awakening experience. I know that I certainly have friends who just don't feel that way at all yet about themselves. Sometimes, I mean, I can see where their sight is changing and they still can't, and that's okay. The self-judging, of course, is a mistake. That's the point. The self-judging is a mistake. The self-judging is listening to ego. So do not think yourself wrong if you get angry. Do not think yourself wrong if you feel jealous or envious. Do not think yourself wrong if you're frustrated or annoyed. Do not think yourself wrong if you experience resistance or fear. Right? I mean, it may be true that these experiences are not a part of the, what we would call, wholly healed mind. But do not think yourself wrong because you do not experience a wholly healed mind. I think in the past I have, and I think maybe many of my friends have, maybe all of you, who knows, I think we have experienced guilt for not having a fully healed mind. I mean, I have had many people confess to me that they have felt guilty for having a headache or having a cold or some other type of illness because the Course seems to imply that a healed mind would not experience sickness. And so they experience sickness and they feel guilty. But I think what's missing there is the idea, you know, maybe a healed mind does not experience these things. In fact, I actually know that the point the point that we would call God, that point of mind, that point of awareness, whatever you want to call it, does not experience headaches or colds. It doesn't. However, the mistake that we make is believing that because we are not at that point wholly and fully without something else, right, that we're guilty. And that's a made-up idea about ourselves. That only comes from self-judgment. We are not guilty for still experiencing illusion, still experiencing ourselves separate, still experiencing emotions and other experiences that are other than truth. We're not guilty for that. So do not think yourself wrong because you do not experience perfect peace, joy, love of natural self. Now, this is just a statement of fact. I love this statement of fact. Your experience is the outcome of believing false ideas is true. Why do you experience a cold? Well, because you still think you're a person. You still think you're a body. You're not guilty for that, but that's why you experience a cold. You're fully identified with that, or at least partially identified with that. And so when the cold comes on, you experience it. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, why are you experiencing annoyance or frustration or fear or anger or hatred? Well, because of those thoughts that you're thinking that you believe. That's why you're experiencing it. All right? So your experience, anything other than the perfect peace, joy, love of natural self, is the outcome of believing false ideas is true. That's what's happening right now. That's what's causing it. And then the next bit of guidance. Recognize the cause of your experience and surrender to the deep peace, trust, abiding in the heart now. So without guilt, right? This is a confession without guilt. Or an admission, probably. I just felt like laughing at the word confession, but an admission might actually be a better word. We are admitting the reason I am having this experience is because of my own false beliefs. If I did not have false beliefs about myself, about the world, you know, then I couldn't experience this. This goes back to a guidance that we've seen, maybe it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago in the journal, called the Noticing Guidance. I heard Cheryl, I think, talking about the Noticing Guidance last night. That is when we acknowledge within ourselves, the reason I experience this is because I believe it. And it doesn't matter what you experience, there is nothing that you can experience that you don't believe in. And that's what we want to eventually see, right? I think I made a comment that I heard a teenage girl walking one day, and now I don't remember what she said, and I don't even remember what I made up that she said last time. So if my story today slightly is different than my story the other day, and you have a sharp memory, it's just because I don't, and I am partially making this story up. The point is true, but the story is somewhat fictional, right? But a girl, two teenage girls were passing me in the store, and one of the teenage girls said something like, "I don't believe in being rude to other people." Well, you know, I understand, you know, I don't believe in being rude to other people. I understand what she meant was that, you know, she thinks it's rude to be rude. But the statement itself caught my attention because there was this realization there's no way she could even see rudeness. There's no way she could even have a concept of rudeness unless she believed in rudeness. Right? She has to believe in being rude to other people. She may not like it. She may wish people would stop it. But she believes in it, or she couldn't see it. Right? I'm drinking a little strawberry smoothie again. Hold on. So that's the point here. Anything that we experience other than the experience of perfect peace, joy, love of the natural self, we're experiencing it because we believe in it. It's a false belief, a false idea that we take for true. And that's why we experience it. So just acknowledge that. Say, boy, I'm frustrated right now because I'm believing something false. I'm annoyed right now because I'm believing something false. I'm scared right now because I'm believing something false, right? I hate him because I'm believing something false. Keep acknowledging the cause. It's not I hate him because he's rude and I hate rude people. That's a delusion. I hate him because he's rude and I hate rude people is a delusion. You're just fooling yourself. I hate him because I'm believing false thoughts. Then at least you're pointing in the direction of the correction within your mind. So recognize the cause of your experience and then surrender to the deep peace trust abiding in the heart now. That peace trust would be the trust that, especially since I'm willing to recognize the true cause of these experiences, they will heal. Right? As long as I'm willing to continue to consistently recognize the true cause of my experience, which is false belief, those false beliefs will be healed. That's surrendering to the deep peace trust abiding in the heart. So one more time. Do not think yourself wrong because you do not experience perfect peace, joy, love of natural self. Your experience is the outcome of believing false ideas as true. Recognize the cause of your experience and surrender to the deep peace trust abiding in the heart now. All right, so if you want to, you can scroll down and look on the left for number 249 and click on that, and I will also post that in the room. All right, and I'm going to read number 249 at the top of page 53. We're down to our last two Ramana quotes for step two of the seven steps. So here's number 249. Is there a greater folly than the aching folly of supposing that the self, the eye of pure awareness, which does not see this changing world at all, is subject to some change? Oh my goodness. I want to go post that on a Facebook discussion I was just having. We'll see if I do. I'm obviously not going to right this second, but it fits very, very well with the discussion. Is there a greater folly than the aching folly of supposing that the self, the eye of pure awareness, which does not see this changing world at all, is subject to some change? The question that is a part of the discussion, although this question hasn't been perfectly stated this way, it's kind of implied within the discussion on this Facebook group. The question is, does self experience? Can you say, I am, right? I am that which is nameless. You know, can you speak, I'm going to say from Nisargadatta's point of view, because he spoke from this point of view often. Can you speak from the point of view, I am that which is nameless, and experience the world? And to be honest, what I think that I am stating in the discussion is that you can't. That if you are still truly experiencing the world, then you are not at that point. And someone put a quote last night. It was actually in a different discussion, same group, but or maybe I read it elsewhere. I think I might have read it elsewhere. But someone else did post a comment somewhere from Nisargadatta. It was a Nisargadatta quote where Nisargadatta, speaking from this supreme point of view, said that he himself does not experience. Right? He himself does not experience. And now look at Ramana Maharshi is saying, is there a greater folly, right? Could you be more foolish than to think? Is there a greater folly than the aching folly? Now that's very interesting. He calls it the aching folly, which means if you believe this, you are indeed suffering. Not only are you foolish, but you are suffering from your belief. Is there a greater folly than the aching folly of supposing that the self, the eye of pure awareness, which does not see this changing world at all, is subject to some change? He's really recalling this belief that, you know, as the fully awakened mind, I can still experience the world. I can still experience anger. I can still experience, you know, hate. I can still experience frustration. I can still experience annoyance. He's saying that is the greatest folly. And in fact, it's an aching folly because you're suffering from believing it. Much better to let go of that belief and allow your awakening to continue to the point that you are laughing at the folly yourself, because now you see it is not at all true. The awakened mind does not experience. And that not experiencing is beyond suffering, beyond the possibility of suffering. This is what the Course means when it says a guiltless mind does not suffer, right? So to say that we are awake and to say, or we may not even say we're awake, we may just have some belief and some agreement because we read it in a book, somebody else said it, that yeah, when you're awakened, you do still experience anger. He's saying to say that is foolish. And you're going to suffer if you hold on to that belief. Let it go. It is not true. The awakened mind does not experience anger. It does not experience annoyance. It does not experience jealousy. It does not experience fear. It does not experience worry. It does not. Don't be held back by such a foolish belief. So let's look at the journal now. See what I wrote on February 15th. How is it that you can know the suffering experienced must end? How is it that you can know everything you take to be real must be false? Because true being and natural experience is only peace, joy, love. Anything else is temporary and based upon an unreal cause. Not just temporary, by the way. You know, many people who believe that the fully enlightened mind experiences anger explains it away by saying, but the anger is temporary, right? It rises and it falls away. You know, and I think I said before, I said, well, that happens to all of us. None of us are permanently angry. That's not awake. We all experience anger rising and falling away. We're mad today at somebody, and by tomorrow we're not mad anymore, you know, or whatever, or by next year or at some point. You know, we're never permanently angry. It comes and goes. We're angry one minute, we're laughing the next, we're sad the next. We're, you know, that's experience. Experience shifts and changes. But the awakened mind is beyond experience. So if we are still experiencing, we are not awakened. The awakened mind is beyond experience. And what causes experience? Untrue beliefs. They're an unreal cause because they're untrue beliefs. And to me, this is not rocket science. It's really not difficult. If at any point, at any moment, you experience something other than peace, joy, love, and you take an honest look at your mind, you'll see there's a thought there that's causing it. I don't think I talked here in Pal Talk, but I did talk in Facebook about a rage, an inner rage that I experienced. I might have talked in Pal Talk, I don't remember, but I know I talked on Facebook about an inner rage I experienced when I returned from Israel. The story that seemed to be the cause, I'm not saying it is the cause, the story that seemed to be the cause of the rage was this. First of all, when we were in Israel, we had a very peaceful experience. And one thing we did was we went in and out of the Palestinian areas a few times in our travels. And whenever we went through the Palestinian areas, there was a a check we had to go through, you know, a check. And what happened is when you went into the Palestinian area, you actually were not stopped and checked. You were only stopped and checked coming out of the Palestinian area. And what we were continuously told is because, you know, Israelis do not go into Palestine as terrorists. Only Palestinians come into Israel as terrorists. So you do not need to check people going into Palestine because terrorists don't go into Palestine. You only need to check people coming out of Palestine because terrorists only come out. So I heard this story a few times while we were in Israel. And then what happened was the last night that we were in Israel, I heard that there was actually fighting going on in the Gaza Strip, which we had been totally unaware of. In fact, the fighting started on June 14th and we had arrived on June 10th. So the fighting actually started while we were there and we were totally unaware of it. And so when I got home, I was curious about that fighting and I looked it up. And this is when the rage started, the inner rage. What I found was that some secretary of the United Nations had declared that Israel should stop their blockades of the Gaza Strip because they were inhumane. As a result of her statement, in the Gaza Strip, they began to protest in the streets, big crowds, angry with signs, screaming, right? Agreeing, of course, with the secretary of the UN. And Israel responded to that by shooting missiles into the Gaza Strip. And I saw pictures of, you know, the destruction. I saw pictures of the missiles being fired. I saw one picture that was particularly touching of like a 3-year-old boy laying dead and mangled. And of course, all of this happened while I was in Israel being told terrorists do not go into Palestine. And the rage that hit was the thought that's because Israel has missiles. You know, you don't need Israeli terrorists. Israel has missiles. Palestine doesn't have missiles. And I found myself seeing Palestine as victim to Israel. I found myself feeling lied to, the wool pulled over my eyes, and there was a rage. There was a rage. Now, the funny thing about the rage is it actually never came to the surface. That's the funny thing. That's why I call it an inner rage. It never fully blossomed to an external rage. It was an inner rage that I watched. So there was a peaceful watching of this inner rage without a denial of it. But the point of my story and how it fits here is that was not complete peace, joy, love in the moment that the inner rage was there. Even if there was the ability to watch it and it never fully blossomed, you still cannot call that only peace, joy, love. And why was the inner rage there? Because I was in that moment believing false ideas. I was believing in a bully. I was believing in victims. I was believing in being lied to and deceived. These thoughts occurred in my mind. They were accepted as true, and they resulted in an experience. Now, through the process of just watching it and not fully going into it, because I really didn't. What happened after about 24 hours is that it died. The rage, the inner rage died. And then, interestingly enough, after the inner rage died, the clarity came. And the clarity was very simple, but it was not seen while the inner rage was there as an obstacle. The clarity is very simple that you know, peace does not come from anything in the world. Peace does not come from taking sides. In fact, Israel and Palestine are perfect examples of that. They each have a point of view. And there are people on the side of Israel that says the Palestinians, you know, should behave differently. And there are definitely people on the side of the Palestinians who says Israel should behave differently. And people who are on both sides think that their point of view is the one that will cause peace. If everybody would just agree with them, there would be peace. Peace does not come from the world. Peace does not come from our participation in the world. Peace does not come from our opinions of the world or how things should be. peace comes by us continually following that inner guidance, seeking inward, and allowing it to lead us from the world. Allowing it to lead us to true seeing. That's where peace comes from. And once this clarity re-arrived, because of course this isn't a new clarity for me, after that, just everything, of course, is fine. I mean, I understand the fighting. I don't know if it's still continuing or not. I never went back to check on it. But, it's not that there's a lack of compassion for the suffering that is occurring. There is compassion for the suffering that occurs. It's just I understand the answer is not to get all riled up about it. The answer is to continue this path of going within. That's my gift. Suffering ends by letting go of all false beliefs, not by rallying with them. When you rally with the false beliefs, you have an experience other than peace, joy, love. And every experience other than peace, joy, love comes from rallying with false beliefs. So how is it that you can know the suffering experience must end? This doesn't deny that there is the experience of suffering. There is the experience of suffering. There's experience of suffering in Gaza Strip, and there's experience of suffering in Israel, although, albeit, the suffering is a different type of suffering. It's the Palestinians that are more hungry right now, and the Israelis are just suffering from their own opinions, but they're both suffering. Right? How do we know that this suffering, this fighting that's gone on in that region forever and ever and ever? My God, when our guide was telling us how many times that region had changed hands, you couldn't count them. How do we know that that will end? How can we know that everything we take to be real is false? How do we know that's not the truth, that war, that fighting, and that we need to go in there and somehow join a side and do something about it? Which maybe you hear the joke in that. How could you join a side and do something about it? Even the Secretary of the United Nations, in declaring that it was time for Israel to stop the blockades, joined a side. She joined with the Palestinians in that moment, and the Palestinians rose up in agreement, and Israel fired missiles. Did that result in peace? Her goal was peace, you know that. She's the Secretary of the United Nations. It did not result in peace. You cannot take a side and then get peace. How is it that you know the suffering experienced must end? How is it that you can know everything you take to be real must be false? Because true being and natural experience is only peace, joy, love. Anything else is temporary and based upon an unreal cause. This is telling us to keep looking in. Keep looking in for the answers. Keep looking at your mind. Keep watching for your false beliefs. The only thing that caused my inner rage was false beliefs. The only thing that causes any experience anywhere other than peace, joy, love is false beliefs. Let's not forget the cause of suffering. Let's not get confused. If we don't get confused on the cause, then we also do not get confused on what the solution is. All right, so let me see. I know there's some writing on the board by Barb and Jay. Okay, because they were with me. And so I was curious as to what they were saying. And Jay is now feeling maybe the inner rage. He says, well, now he's kind of reacting, which doesn't surprise me because his experience was very similar to mine. Barb says it would be interesting to talk to Sam about it. Sam was our guide. Right now, I don't feel any interest in doing that. But, I heard Sam's opinions stated, and I feel like just letting him keep them for now. Sam does have one thing about Sam. One thing I do want to say about Sam is that one of the places that we visited on this trip was the Dome of the Rock. Now, for those of you who don't know about Israel and the Dome of the Rock, there's actually a hill called Mount Moriah. It's called Mount Moriah, but to me it looks like a tiny hill. in Israel. And supposedly Mount Moriah is the place where Abraham, who is the father of both the Israel and the Muslim nation, Abraham was guided by God to sacrifice his son, Isaac, on an altar. And Abraham apparently was very embarrassed about this, but wanted to follow God's guidance. So he left his people and, you know, hiked far away with his son and climbed Mount Moriah. And there on a rock, he was going to sacrifice his son, Isaac. But just prior to him, you know, lowering the knife to kill him, an angel showed up and told him he didn't need to do that, and provided a ram for the sacrifice. So Isaac was saved. So that place is perceived to be very holy by the Jewish nation. And Solomon, the king who built the first temple for God, chose to build the temple on Mount Moriah at that site. Now that temple was destroyed, and years later, King Herod built a second temple on that site, a second holy temple, which was also destroyed. And the Jewish temple has not been rebuilt. But what is now on that site is a Muslim dome called the Dome of the Rock. And there's a western wall of the old Jewish temple still standing. Many of you have probably heard of this. The western wall is also called the Wailing Wall. And Jewish people go there to pray, and I'm sure they pray many prayers. But one of the prayers that is said to be prayed there is the prayer for the destruction of the Dome of the Rock, so that a third Jewish temple could be built, right? So, so Sam was commenting on all of this, and Sam said that he actually hoped the Dome of the Rock would stay. And he said the reason for that was he knows people. And he knows that if there's ever going to be a change from the Dome of the Rock back to the third temple, what's going to be involved in that is people killing people. And he doesn't want that. He doesn't think that even the third temple is worth people killing people. So that does show, I'm going to say, some clarity on his part, some heart on his part. We saw actually many signs of his heart. We also saw his biases and opinions that were still quite Israeli, but we saw that he wasn't fully there. There's movement away from that. And in fact, he didn't originally even want to take us to the Dome of the Rock because it's Muslim. But when we asked a couple of times, he finally did take us, and he said his eyes were opened by that experience of taking us there and seeing that really it's the same place where the temple was. It's not the temple or the dome. You know, it's the same place. You know, there's no difference. And his eyes were really open. So that was kind of a nice experience. And yes, that was the dome covered of gold, or in gold, yes. And hold on one moment. I'm going to let Jamie out, and then I'll be right back. But we can see, even from that one tiny story, that, you know, all upset comes from thought, right? First there's the thought that this is a holy place because Abraham, you know, came here to sacrifice Isaac and God appeared, or an angel appeared and gave him a ram instead. This is now a special holy place. That's a thought right there, right? And in fact, if you know the story of Abraham and his sons Ishmael and Isaac, you can see just the birth of the thoughts that lead to the conflict between Israel and the Muslims that continues to this day. The whole conflict is nothing but thoughts and beliefs, and it should have been, and you know. And look at all the people who have died. Look at all the wars that have been fought, you know, hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds, actually thousands of years. Because of thought. That's the point. And so to join a side and to think this side is more right is just to continue in thought, to continue in that participation. That is not the way to peace. And it's obvious. It's clear. It's not difficult to see. The way to peace is, I'm going to call it, to retreat from thought by going within and letting inner guidance guide us to awakening from thought, right? That's the way to peace. That's the only way to peace. How is it that you can know the suffering experience must end? How is it that you can know everything you take to be real must be false? Because true being and natural experience is only peace, joy, love. Anything else is temporary and based upon unreal cause. So our goal is to be led away from belief in unreal cause, right? All right, so you can scroll down and we will go to number 250. I think we'll have time for this one more. I will put the link in the room. And this is the last Ramana Maharshi quote. Actually, it's a Muru Ganar's words, but it's the last Ramana Maharshi teaching for step two. So let's read it. Number 250. Pure being, our self nature, that alone exists eternally. Apart from that, all objects we perceive are clusters of elusive appearances that come and go, while that, with a capital T, unmoving and unchanged, abides the same forever. Again, pure being, our self nature, that alone exists eternally. Apart from that, all objects we perceive are clusters of elusive appearances that come and go, while that, with a capital T, unmoving and unchanged, abides the same forever. And maybe that's even the symbol that Sam got out of taking us to the Dome of the Rock, was the symbol of, you know, for him, he saw that the temple actually abides here forever, you know, whether it's here or not, right? You know, but that would be a symbol for God abiding forever, isness abiding forever, right? Maybe that's the symbol that he got there, where he says his eyes were opened by taking us. Let's go ahead and read number 250. By the way, if you go to my Facebook page, just today I posted a picture of the entire group, minus Jasmine, who was the photographer, the entire group standing on the Mount of Olives with Jerusalem in the background, and you'll see the gold dome there. That is the Dome of the Rock, by the way. That's the place where the first and second temple were, and now the Dome of the Rock is. So that is the holy spot that we will now make the symbol of that unmoving, unchanged, abides the same forever. That's what that spot shall now be the symbol of. Doesn't matter whether there's a temple there, a Dome of a Rock there, a Christian church there. That spot is the representative of that unmoving and unchanged abides the same forever, right? All right, number 250. Natural peace, joy, love is ever-present, present now, right? Right now. That's what that spot will be the symbol of. And I think that's what Sam felt when we went up there. Natural peace, joy, love is ever present, present now. What covers over, right? Whether it be the Dome of the Rock or a temple or something else. What covers over are merely false ideas believed and focused on. When practice is complete and layers of falsehood fall away, when all of the buildings disappear from that spot, sight knows and remembers that peace, joy, love is ever present. It is just Mount Moriah without anything, just bushes and trees like it originally was. Do not let mind discourage you. Continue after your heart. Okay, Jamie wants in. Hold on. She's a very dirty dog, but since there's only a few minutes left, I'll just wait and clean her after the teaching has ended. So I'm going to go ahead and read Ramana Maharshi and the journal entry again, side by side. Pure being, our self nature, that alone exists eternally. Apart from that, all objects we perceive are clusters of elusive appearances that come and go, which again, the two temples and now the Dome of the Rock are perfect examples of that, because these buildings come and go, right? And may continue to do so. People are praying that they will continue to do so. Apart from that, the pure being, the self nature that exists eternally, all objects we perceive are clusters of elusive appearances that come and go, while that, represented by Mount Moriah itself, unmoving and unchanged, the mountain is unmoved and unchanged, abides the same forever, right? Number 250 in the journal. Natural peace, joy, love is ever present, present now. What covers over are merely false ideas believed and focused on. When practice is complete and layers of falsehood fall away, sight knows and remembers that peace, joy, love is ever present. Do not let mind discourage you. Continue after your heart. So, this is like saying that Mount Moriah is in us, right? And we've probably built layers upon layers of temples and domes of the rocks and many other things on top of Mount Moriah so that we don't even recognize the Mount Moriah in ourself. And we actually do need to allow these temples to be destroyed, these domes of the rock to be destroyed, these ideas to fall away, these falsehood to be seen as false. We need to allow all of these buildings to be torn down and get back to the Mount Moriah. That's really what the spiritual path is all about, is getting back to that, back to Mount Moriah, right? Back to the beginning, the Course calls it. But when we get back to the beginning, what we realize is that the beginning has never changed. Mount Moriah has always been Mount Moriah, right? The true self that we are has always been the true self that we are. It has never changed, and we have never left it. We only built and tore down things on top of it. Natural peace, joy, love is ever present, present now. What covers over are merely false ideas believed and focused on. When practice is complete and layers of falsehood fall away, when practice is complete, the tearing down of the buildings, the destroying of all of the temples and all of the domes of the rock, when practice is complete and layers of falsehood fall away, sight knows and remembers, it remembers, that peace, joy, love is ever present. Mount Moriah was always there, the same. Do not let mind discourage you. Continue after your heart. Keep following this path. Keep going. As Jesus said, seek and you will find. The inner seeking, not the outer seeking, not seeking from lack, but continuing to follow that inner guide, that type of seeking. And that's it for today. So you guys have a wonderful week. And there are going to be some changes to my schedule in the next week because Ron's going to be here. But I will write an email to Dove and make those changes clear on paper so that they're not hopefully easily forgotten. All right. Bye-bye.